I mean, that's a valid question, you know. I mean, it, you know, a lot of people look around.
Yeah.
You know, people look around and they see, you know, they see people with long hair and who wear, you know, funny clothes. And yet, you know, tomorrow they may come back with a whole bunch of police behind them, you know, and busted, you know. Or they see people with long hair who live totally separately and who are still ordering their wives around, you know. Hey, honey, bring me a glass of water, you know, and she's in the middle of taking care of the babies, you know. And they see freaks, you know, who are still racist, you know, who don't, you know, and it's true, you know, that there's a lot of people who are, I mean, there's a whole transitional thing that's going on, you know, and there's a whole, it's like John was saying, before he went into prison in 1969, you looked around and there wasn't no freaks around at all, you know, and now when he came out, and like, it's been like 2 days since after he got out, before he even saw somebody that wasn't a freak, almost, you know. And there's a whole transitional phase going on. It's like we're developing our culture, you know, as we go along. It develops, and it's what we make it is what we're going to make it, you know. And criticisms like that everybody gives it, you know, are right on, because that's what's going to make it develop, and that's what's going to make us see, you know. I mean, we really believe that our culture is intrinsically revolutionary, you know, that it really is revolutionary in the sense of change, that it is causing a very progressive change, that it has a progressive vision, but that, like all cultures, the whole planet right now, it's fucked up, you know. It's really fucked up because of the situation that we're in, because of what we came out of, you know. But, you know, that's how we feel anyway.
Yeah, essentially, see, I'm sorry that I didn't speak to the question, you know. And she phrased it in a way I could, you know, I didn't really understand where you were coming from, you know. And I'd like to apologize for that. I'd like to just say, to add to what she said, that, you see, in the two, if you start with material reality rather than consciousness, you know, the freaks are people who live and look like freaks. You know, it isn't a function of their political consciousness, you know. In other words, so you have a situation like this as well, where people are becoming, you know, trying to become new people, you know, who maybe can't articulate it again, you know what I mean? Or who couldn't say to you, I want to become a new person, but a lot of them can say that. A lot of people can say that, you know. Others can't. Others don't know, I mean, nobody knows what they're doing, you know. But people look around and they say, wow, this thing looks like something I want to get into. You know, I don't want to be like they say I should be. I want to be something different, you know. I don't know anything. You know, I just know I want to be like that. You know, I know that's the way that my relationship, I wanted to be a beatnik, you know. And I looked around and saw the only people who were anything like me that I could relate to were people that were beatniks, you know. I didn't know nothing about being no beatnik, you know. I just saw some movies and read some books, you know. But it really looked terrible. You read about weed, I wanted to smoke some weed real bad, you know. Really sounded good. I didn't know nothing about it. You know, I didn't know it was illegal. I didn't know anything like that, you know. But I just related to that, you see. And so started to try and become like that. During the course of that, ran into other situations and different things happened, you know, where my consciousness started to develop to a certain point, which led to another turning point, you know, and new things would happen. You know, my consciousness would develop more and more. But what started it, you know, wasn't the idea of something clear that I wanted to be a revolutionary, that I wanted to be, that I hated imperialism. You know, somebody would come up and said imperialism to me, I would have knocked them down, you know. I didn't know what they were talking about. You know, politics is pig shit. You know, all those politicians, it's all bold. You see, none of that's the problem. You know, we got to do away with them, you know, and that whole thing. So to me, to see something like this has been going on over the last few years, where increasingly, every day, you know, more and more people are taking the minimal step, you know, of refusing to fit in to the image, even, of what honkies project. You know what I mean? People are minimally refusing to wear suits and ties and get haircuts and shine their shoes and wear brassieres and girdles and lipstick and all that weird stuff, see? And increasingly people are looking at television and they're saying, this is all bullshit. You know, I don't know what's true. You know, they're confused. But they're beginning to reject this other shit, and they're beginning to look towards something different, you know? And it's a, we look at it as the responsibility of people who consider themselves to be revolutionaries or political workers of any kind. And your responsibility is to the people, you know, and your responsibility is to find those where people are trying to develop and try and provide them with whatever you can to help them develop, you know? That the way that you build a revolutionary movement, the way that you create change, is by encouraging everyone who steps forward, even the minimal one step, to say, I don't want to be like that. Right on, brother, come with us. Right on, sister, you know, check this out then. You know, we feel that that's the job of serious revolutionaries, is to raise, is to reach out to people and to help them develop, you know, and to help them develop not only their consciousness, but to help them develop programs and institutions to serve their needs, you know, like to deal with their needs for food, for housing, for medical care, and all of those things, you know, and that to look at it from a position of saying, I mean, this is a very popular position, you know, and one of the reasons I think that I reacted, you know, to your question was that I had heard it a lot of times, that same question, you know, and I tried to answer it a lot of times, and I just took the wrong attitude toward it, you know, it's really a serious, valid question. That, oh, I lost it. Can you help me?
Okay.
Yeah.
You say that we use food and all these things that do all this to live together, we have to have order,
right? Right.
All right, to have order, you have to have people that are in charge, or we wouldn't have order. So that means we do
The people in charge don't enforce order. The people in charge make it possible for things to be implemented, you know, ideas to be implemented. Organization enables you to help see it.
What about anarchy? What is anarchy?
Anarchy is an idea, essentially. You see?
I'm curious, alright, what is everyone looking for? They're looking for happiness, right?
At
least.
Okay, well,
that's
you know, a form of consciousness, something in your mind, right?
No.
No, not either.
But now, well, like, alright, you have a form of happiness.
I mean, you know, happiness.
But happiness is based on concrete material conditions.
Happiness is just here, you know what I mean? I mean, happiness is two people being together. It isn't an idea, you see? Right. Well, the vicious circle is you stay in your mind.
Regardless if you're a redneck who looks down at people with long hair, or you're a long haired person that doesn't, you know, take, what do you say, monkeys?
Monkeys, right.
Yeah, right. Okay, what's the difference, man? You have an attitude, they have an attitude.
Right.
It's not true that we don't like honkies either. Some of our best friends are honkies. It's just
some of our
fans. It's the concrete definition of a life.
Good God. That was disgraceful, wasn't it?
No. He's trying to say that, well, we don't like consciousness.
No, that isn't what he's trying to say. That was.
I'm just trying to look at it rationally and realistically. Now, you have, you know, you say you have a system, like this, but I'm saying that whatever system we have, with people who live together in harmony,
that's
a system. There's no
such
thing as total freedom anymore.
There never was, my friend. We could never fly, for example, you know? I mean, you can define total freedom, and, you know, we can never die and come back right away. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a condition of people's lives to be restricted one way or another, you know?
Are you saying that what we're trying to do is just replace the order with a... See, what we're saying is that the problem... See, what we're saying is that the problem, that one of the major problems is the way... I mean, like, we have certain needs that have to be met, right? The problem is, how do you meet those needs? you know. And the system that is set up now to meet those needs is obviously not working, because it's not meeting the needs, you know. It's just not, almost anywhere on the planet. So what we're trying to do is figure out a way, a system, you know, some kind of way to meet the needs, you know, of the people whose needs have to be met, everybody's needs, you know. And of course, we want to reach a point at some time where the people who are meeting those needs don't have anything to do with control or force. I've seen it working.
Wait a minute. I want to take this to its point, okay? What is your solution? I mean, why haven't you hung it up yet? I mean, yeah, but what do you do? Given your analysis, I'll accept your analysis, what do you do? Can you say the history, that the condition of people today is the same as it's always been the same as this, and it always will be the same as this? And that there's no sense trying to do anything, you might as well go to Jamaica?
I'd say it happens to the frame of mind, and you can look at any system and be happy in your mind. And that's what it is.
I refuse that.
You go to the penitentiary, you're going to say the same thing to those brothers in the penitentiary?
I'm not saying being constricted.
Alright,
it's not the penitentiary, okay, I'm not saying that. But I'm
what are you going to do about the penitentiary? You're just going to exit out of the picture?
See, I think, you know, like, your question is a valid question, too, because people are very much afraid, you know, of the fact that there's other people, you know, who are trying to set up, you know, other systems, you know, and maybe there are people, let me finish what I'm saying, okay, maybe there are people that are going to set up systems that are going to be, you know, just total control things, you know, there's a lot of people who are afraid of that, you know, but you can see already in real life, you know, in concrete conditions, that there are societies growing up, you know, where the government structure is not a control thing, it's a service organization, you know, you can see it happening.
Right. It's the nature of the universe. There's nothing wrong with it. The universe has laws, you know.
That's what we have to get back to, is the natural order of the universe.
And every year there's a spring, you know, it rules that there will be no more snow, you know. No matter how bad you want snow in July, you can't get it. You're never going to be free. See?
We have a system, what you're doing in this country.
Yeah.
I said you can be happy in this system.
Go ahead. We ain't going to be. We ain't happy with it. I will not be happy. We aren't free until everybody's free, man. I am not going to be happy as long as there are oppressing people on this planet. I am not going to be happy.
No.
That's wrong.
If you study history, the history of the planet, all you have to do is study the history of the planet, and you can see a whole movement. You define it. That's what we're trying to do in our everyday lives.
I would like to suggest at this point that the people who want to engage in a philosophical debate remove themselves to another room and carry it on with each other. And the people who want to talk about other stuff, we can go here. Brother back here. Yeah.
I was wondering, the cool thing is that the whole planet's pretty doing the right thing. Development humanity. Right. So I was interested more in your party, like the programs right now. The concrete programs that you're doing. I'm more interested in that than, like, saying, you know, how the rednecks are doing.
Yeah, me too.
I think everybody would agree, you know, that what we're into is building an alternative culture. I mean, that's what we are, is an alternative culture that's developing. And what we're trying to do is to meet our people's needs, to define our needs, you know, what they are, and then to find out the best way to develop structures or whatever that it takes to meet those needs. So in Ann Arbor, the major program, or the major way that we've been, you know, especially since John's gotten out, for a long time, one of our major programs, of course, was just getting John out of prison, you know, for 2.5 years. And all the time, though, at the same time that we were doing that and trying to figure out how to do that, we're building up the tribal council, what we call the tribal council, which is an organization that includes all the different service organizations within Ann Arbor, from drug help, which is a crisis intervention and educational thing about drugs, and Ozone House, which is a runaway service and a place that crashes people, network of ride switchboard. We started the Ann Arbor Sun, to deal with bringing the community together, with more trying to define the community more through the newspaper and bring people together more through the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And and one of the major programs was the food co-op that we started, and now there's two or three food co-ops in Ann Arbor we're trying to get a whole state, we're working on a whole statewide food co-op thing that's developing now. As many problems as we have, as our people have, that's what we're trying to do, is to find out ways to meet the needs of those programs. One of the major programs was the PART program last summer. It's been developing since 1969, since 1967. And within that, the tribal council actually almost grew out of the PART program, because at the PART program we saw a first working coalition of the different groups in Ann Arbor, to work on the PART program, to develop that, because we found that with the rising drug problem that we had to have, people there to deal with people who were, shooting up and were ODing and having, all kinds of drug problems. Speaking out, or whatever, because of all the bogus dope that was around. We also started negotiations with the city to figure out ways not to have the police in the park, so that we developed our own policing program, although I hate to call it that, but just policing in the sense of that kind of work that would be done, which is the psychedelic rangers. We developed that whole program. And it developed to where there are no longer any city police that come into the parks on Sunday. We do that whole thing entirely ourselves. And
the free medical
clinic. Yeah, there's a free medical clinic. Now it's developed to the point where there's a community center in Ann Arbor where we're going to start a people's ballroom. And there's a room large enough there that we're going to be building ourselves, and making into the people's ballroom. Music is what we can, what we're trying to do is figure out ways to build an economic base for our people, so that we can eventually totally replace, the whole entire structure that we've grown up in. Because I think everybody would agree that as you learn more and more, you find out that everything you were brought up with is backwards and lies. Everything, from the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the music, the things you study, the history, the buildings are ugly and uncomfortable. When you think about it, everything in this country, almost everything, is just totally backwards. There are very few things. There are some things. That brother's back there shaking his head no. But I really, it's pretty ugly. And there's a whole lot, I think a lot of people have got a really heavy vision of the type of thing that we could do if we all, put our heads together, and really start doing it, and really start building it. And that. Yeah, right. Now the question is the vote. Since we've gotten the vote, what are we going to be doing with the vote now, and how much power, can we use through the vote? And people really question us now, since we took the, we had the name White Panthers and we were doing the whole super militant trip, and now we took the name Rainbow People's Party, and I think a lot of people think that we took a giant step to the right, that we're becoming, that we're losing our revolutionariness or whatever. Now they see us, going into the electoral politics. And there's a real question among people about just how powerful, can electoral politics be, and what, what exactly is our involvement in it. And I think we all agree that the electoral politics, that type of power, can only go so far. That we do know, that there is a lot of possibilities for things like being elected to the city council and getting into like county seats, and having, getting in there any way we can and getting as many programs as we can through and being recognized as a viable part of a community, and being able to be represented on the city council.
is a good thing.
Can I say something else that I don't know? Because you're concentrating in Ann Arbor right now, right? So are you going to try to set up, like, are you financially able to set up your own type of structural power? Are you going to try to get into the city council type thing and maybe get back into Detroit? Like that,
and
or are you
going to
try to financially become independent and then,
strike out? Oh. Well, essentially, since the Rainbow People's Party was formed last May 1st, was actually the time when we dissolved the other thing and started a whole new, not just with a new name, but with a whole new way of going about our work. And we decided at that time to concentrate on our community in Ann Arbor where we live and to take the series that we developed, you know, in terms of we've been talking about people working collectively to provide for their needs. We've been talking about all this stuff that we're talking about now. We decided to take Ann Arbor and concentrate all of our energy and all of our resources on our local community and to test out our ideas and our theories, you know, in actual day-to-day practice to see what worked and what didn't work, and to say that if we engage in this particular type of activity for a particular period of time, at the end of that time we would have a method of dealing with that problem developed, which then we could codify, you know, and turn to people somewhere else and say, this is how we did it here, maybe you can use these principles, if not the whole thing in your area, you know, given the specific differences, right? So we would use this as a testing ground or proving ground, actually, you know, to prove that these theories made sense and to see where we were wrong and make our mistakes on a small scale, you know what I mean? And to make a commitment to that community to say, we not only have a house here, but we're a part of this community and we're going to work with you, you know, to try and deal with the problem. We're going to try and make all this rhetoric into some kind of active material thing, you see. And we also determined that as far as the party itself, the organization developing and spreading to different areas, that we would limit ourselves to this particular locality until we were strong enough and well enough organized and had enough practice to be able to go, say, the people would ask us in some other community to help them, you know, organize themselves. So we would be able to have something concrete to offer them and not just a couple letters in the mail and some phone calls and do this and do that, you see. But actually, yeah, right, right. And it's still, our next step is now to try to establish an independent, or not an independent, but a functionally autonomous chapter of the party in Ann Arbor. Our party at this point is essentially 20 people, and it's composed of a number of people, say 8 people who are on the street right now. They're designated as a central committee, the people with the stability and experience and commitment over the years, and we know the people on our central committee, for example, aren't going to California next month because they got tired of it being cold out here, you know, or that they aren't going to cut their hair and go back to school, you know, or that they aren't going to do stuff like this. You see, they have a central commitment and stability which has been improved over the years, including jail terms and et cetera, you know. And then we have another core of people who over the past year, or 2 years, maybe 3 years in some cases, 4 years with the band, have been working with us and have demonstrated that they are going to stay and work. You know, in other words, it takes a commitment. You know, for an organization like this, it takes a 24-hour-a-day commitment. This is what you do, you know. You don't do anything else. You know, this is what you do, you see. So it's serious business, you know what I mean? It isn't a matter of just putting a button on and running around running your mouth. You know, when you get down to a policy of going out in the street, you know, and putting together a newspaper and participating in programs and putting on free concerts in the park every Sunday during the summer and working out people's ballroom, this is serious business, you know. This takes, you don't lay around and get high all day and shit anymore. You know what I mean? You get high on the run. Which is, you know. And, I mean, you have to get high to do this kind of work, otherwise you go crazy. See? So,
did you get elected to the committee, or, is it elected?
No.
It's
We don't do anything by vote. Like internally, we operate on the principle of democratic centralism. All decisions are made collectively, and nothing is carried out if there's dissension. Like it's not like if the majority is for something that wins. You know, like if there's people who are resistant to some ideas. They have to be persuaded.
You have to postpone action until everyone can see that this is, you know.
That's rather than the counter-position.
I mean,
yeah, you're trying to get moving and meet some capital. It seems like a lot of bands are close to you, like you're trying to destroy a command of voting, like MC5 for themselves is really good too. And a lot of us are really starting to take off now, but they often be a different company. Have you ever thought about, like, even those people that are close to you, they've played all these benefits and everything.
We think about it every day. Think about it every minute. Yeah. Really? What a beautiful brother, too.
They're trying to take off. It seems like, you know, they're pretty heavy behind this movie.
Let's
get all those people together.
We're talking with them on a, you know, day-to-day basis right now, as a matter of fact, you know. We're working every way we can. Our main emphasis has been in music, as you know, and it's not just been to produce entertainment, but it's been to develop the political potential of the music and to develop an economic base, not only for ourselves, but eventually for our entire community and eventually for our entire nation, you know.
Are you still with the MC5?
No. No, the MC5 more or less deserted us when I got locked up, you know.
Is it true that their fans were sort of like the older generation, like at nightclubs and stuff?
They're playing in bars, I understand, yeah.
Right, like they're not doing rock and roll anymore. I
don't have any idea.
I'm a little bit more interested in your politics still.
Can you hold for a minute and let me finish that? I was hoping you had something to add to that. Okay. What I was going to say is that we're constantly, you know, I spent 2.5 years plotting and scheming in my cell, you know, trying to figure out how to bring this stuff about. And we're very encouraged by a lot of things that are happening. You know, we're tremendously encouraged by the step that John and Yoko took, for example. We're encouraged by things like the Jefferson Airplane coming to Ann Arbor to play, a regular concert at the university and calling us up afterwards and asking if they can come over and talk about doing benefits, you know, and about setting up alternative distribution networks and stuff like that. You know, we're encouraged about going to New York and having Sly and the Family Stones managers tracking me all over town trying to get me to come and talk to them about they want to do benefits now after having never done any in their career. You see what I mean? We're encouraged by people calling up and saying, John Kay of Steppenwolf wants to talk to you, you know, about these things that he's been reading.
Stevie Wonder
went through a week-long struggle with his management in Motown and paid all of his expenses for his whole fucking band to come and play at that rally. You know, on our balance sheet, there isn't a penny of expenses for Stevie Wonder.
Dr. John
comes to town and calls me up, you know, came to town right 2 days after I got out of the penitentiary and called up. I want to talk to you, this is far out, I want to talk to you, we got to get moving, we got to create some disruption, you know. You know, and having things like talking to Dr. John, you know, whose name is Mac Rebenack, who's a, you know, a beautiful person, man, and having him say, like, well, a few years ago we were out there in front, and we were projecting the thing out to people and telling people about something that was beautiful and turning them on to something, and they all got turned on to it, and they all shot past us. And now they're up there and we're back here and they're saying, come on, we love you, you know, we want you to come and be as far out as you were before, you know. I mean, this stuff, you know, is killer stuff, you see. And it's going on in Michigan, you know, and again, this is why we're putting our roots in here, this is why our roots are here. This is why we're staying here, this is why we have stayed here. because there's a situation in Michigan where there's young bands developing out of high schools every day who want to take over the world with rock and roll, you know, who ain't interested about the French Riviera at all, you know, who don't care nothing about white Rolls Royces, you know, whose interest in making music is turning people on and making some money to get people out of jail with and to free clinics and shit like that, you know. So you have a situation where Mitch is calling up and saying, I heard about this, you want us to play for that? You see what I mean? All that's going on. It's going to take some time to bring it together into some kind of form, you know, that's recognizable and that will show people that actually this stuff is going on, you know. But just, I'm just saying all this, I usually don't like to talk about stuff that ain't happened yet, you know, because then if it doesn't happen, then people say, well, we better give up, you know, we thought this was going to happen and it didn't happen, you know. So to me, it's better not to talk about. But I think all that's real, and you know, I'll go out and say that, you know.
Paramount.
Yeah, they're both with Paramount. You know, we talked, the commander was in town last month, and we talked with the commander and with Joe Kerr, who was manager, who was his brother from Ann Arbor, you know. And we talked, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talk going on, you know, and there's a lot of plotting and scheming being.
They have long contracts with people like you.
Yeah. Because they have contracts now. Jefferson Airplane, for example, just formed their own record label. And they have a three-year, I talked with their manager about this, they have a three-year distribution deal with RCA Victor, you know. At the end of that three, I said to him, for example, I'm just asking people questions, you know. I'm saying, at the end of that 3 years, would you be interested in an alternative distribution network? You know, would you be interested, for example, in getting together with other bands that are just getting their own labels? You know, and forming a cartel to set up a distribution thing, so at the end of those 3 years, you don't have to give all that money to RCA Victor. You know, but it goes back into this, and so you can expand it, you know, and start taking that shit over from those people. Yeah, we're deep into it, man. We were talking to Jerry Garcia last week, you know, and shit like that. So all this is going on, see? You know, and it's like the brother here says, it's about time, you know? And we're in a position, you see, where on the one hand, this is what we've been talking about for a number of years, you know. This is what our practice was about when we had a band that was in the spotlight, you know, that despite the contradictions between us and the band where they wanted essentially to be the Beatles, you know, despite those contradictions, still in all, they played more free concerts than any band on earth up to that time, you know, and more benefits, you see, and that they got out and put out shit that caused all kinds of commotion, you know. So, in other words, they know we're talking about this stuff and we're practicing it on our little level as good as we can, you know. They know that when we're talking this stuff, we aren't bullshitting, you know. We'll go to the penitentiary for it, you see what I mean? Because we're going to do it, you know. And so they have some confidence in that. And on the other hand, they know that when we're talking this stuff, that it isn't just a bunch of words on paper like a lot of people running around talking about all this is a rip-off and down with this and that and down with this and that, but we can actually produce concerts of our own, you know. If somebody gave us a building tomorrow, we could actually run that building as a people's ballroom. You see what I mean? And if they aren't going to give it to us, we're going to go out and get it ourselves. And we know how to do it. We have experience. This is why, to get back right to where you were, you see, about that, the end of that Leninart, that wasn't you, was it? That was somebody else. Yeah, okay. About the end of that Leninart, I mean, I spent 5 hours. You know, the day that we had a chance to talk with John and Yoko, I spent 5 hours trying to convince them. You see, that's why I like that last sentence, because I spent that time trying to convince them that we were rock and roll free. You know, we weren't radical. You see, we weren't, our roots weren't in just, you know, although we had been engaged in running around, running our mouths off, our practice wasn't, and our experience wasn't limited to that. You know, we were essentially freaks off the street, you know, and we live with rock and roll bands, you know. A rock and roll band lives in our house with us, and the lead singer is a member of the Central Committee of the Rainbow People's Party, and the other members of the band are members of the Rainbow People's Party, take part in political education, respond to party discipline, you know, do work in the community, attend tribal council meetings, et cetera, et cetera. But it isn't a bunch of radicals with acoustic guitars singing some song about Ho Chi Minh. You know, but it's rock and roll. That's where we come from, you know. So I was, you know, I was glad that he reached that conclusion, you see. because the image of Rolling Stone and all those other people are projecting is that these are just some people who are trying to rip off rock and roll. You see? The people who are ripping off rock and roll are out there saying, these people want to rip off rock and roll. We're the protectors of rock and roll. We know what's right. You know? You see? We're going to tell you kids, look out for these people. They're crazy. See? They're trying to rip you off. They're trying to manipulate you and use you, you know? So that's the kind of thing that you combat, you know? But I lost, were we all right? Let me get to you, okay?
I'm still a little rough. Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone mm-hmm. have been sort of honky-ish mm-hmm. for you, and Leonard Bernstein was a honky, mm-hmm. and I guess the Kennedys are honky, mm-hmm. and maybe McGovern's a honky, you mm-hmm. know?
Sure.
And, you know, a politics of alienation, it's us or them. I'm wondering where...
No, it's a fact.
Okay, where does Cleaver fit in now? Busting Leary, you know? Is he a honky? Is Mick Jagger a honky? No,
a honky is a condition of being. You know, it isn't a matter of a political thing, it's a condition of being.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just black and white.
It's
huh?
a culture.
That's what I'm really interested in.
Well, I mean, would you call George McGovern a freak, for example? Would you call him black?
I'm a freak, but
would you call him a yellow person?
The enemy.
No, I'm not saying
this
that.
This is what I was trying to get at before. We don't define honkies as our enemies, you know. It's just a descriptive term of a lifestyle, you know, that is different from ours.
And what do you call that music that they play in dentist offices, man? That's honky music, man. You know? What do you call one?
It's like calling us freaks.
Yeah.
You know, freaks is derogatory to some people and it's not to others.
What's a Cleaver?
What is Cleaver? Cleaver is a black revolutionary.
Yeah, you know,
ultra-leftist black revolutionary. Probably, yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, hearing you talk, I'm not, you know, saying that.
Eldridge Cleaver is an individual, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Hearing
he's a black revolutionary with an ultra-leftist position, you know, essentially, you know, to define in one sentence, you know. But to say Eldridge Cleaver was Bosnian is not to say that Huey P. Newton or Bobby Seale were Bosnian,
right.
Or that Robert F. Williams, is, you know, was Bosnian. You see what I mean?
So, what I want to know
is this
that,
on this point?
Is there any compromise? Is there any compromise? I mean, could you throw your power to George McGovern? You know, because it seems to me...
Are you saying could or would? We certainly could, yeah. If George McGovern adopted a platform, you know, and pledged himself to carry another platform, that people, you know...
I would just a little bit closer to yours than Richard Nixon's was. You know, or would you rather...
Well, we wouldn't be engaged in any organized effort, you know, to do anything for him if he was just almost like that, like Muskie, you know, for example.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I would vote for Muskie over Nixon, personally.
Okay.
You know?
I'm kind of interested in that.
I have a direct interest in having Democratic judges and Democratic Supreme Court justices, you know, to rule on my cases and shit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's serious, you know? I'm very interested in having John P. Mitchell replaced, you know? And Richard Kleindienst and the rest of the Nazis on the Justice Department. I'm very interested in getting them out of there, you know. If they could put Ramsey Clark back in, I'd be happy, you know. I'd be absolutely happy. Not absolutely. With them, I would be happy.
Cleaver or Humphrey in 68, you know.
I wouldn't vote for either one of them. Essentially. I would have voted for Eldridge Cleaver in 1968 if I would have voted.
All right.
You know, but I had a position in 1968 that it doesn't make any difference, you know.
No, and
which is an idealist
like
position, which was dumb,
street.
You see.
No,
I wish I would have voted for Hubert Humphrey, you know what I mean?
A lot of things that I hear seem to, that you say or anything else, or a lot of the circus sort of politics mm-hmm. of Reuben or Hoffman or anything, don't seem to convert anybody except the people who are already really committed or really converted. You know, mm-hmm. Like you say, the people on the streets lifestyle convert people, but the people who listen to Hoffman and Reuben are already people who are converted. You know, same thing.
Well, I don't
like
think that's true at all. That's like saying all the people who listen to the Beatles were already converted.
Well, I think there's a difference there. Just like saying fucking.
Well, somebody didn't know what you're saying is that to project something through the media just reaches those who are already convinced, you know. I mean, the Beatles won over millions of people to rock and roll, you know. Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, and I don't have no brief, you know what I mean? They're friends of mine, you know. Politically, I don't have no brief for them, you know. I mean, politically, they don't even live in communes, you know. So, if, you know, for example, if people reject them, it's because they're running one thing and they aren't practicing it. You see, I didn't live in any commune for 10 years, you know. So, but as far as that's concerned, you know what I mean? They have influenced millions and millions of young people, you know, who are sitting out in Sioux City, Iowa.
People who could help you.
Pardon?
Who might help you.
Certainly.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we supported last year the Democratic mayor incumbent in the city elections in Ann Arbor, for example.
Do you think the past have alienated people who could have helped?
Certainly.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
So we made a lot of stupid mistakes.
Oh,
no,
right.
It was bad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we tried to explain to the whole White Kansas stage, you know,
okay.
That whole stage.
We're making mistakes now, you know.
Yeah,
we probably shouldn't be here, you know.
Certain parts of the rhetoric, like motherfucker and socialist music empire,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that, you know, that seems to, you know, seems to me to be the same as fucking in the streets as some other things. Where
a lot of people relate to fucking in the streets, man,
okay,
you know.
That's true. A lot of people don't. Where
yeah.
almost everybody, or a lot of good people who weren't streets, related to Harrison's concert, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just related to that.
Good.
There was nothing, okay. And I'm just wondering, it seems like fucking in the streets is an eloquent statement of rage.
Not at all. Rage.
Rage at a system that...
You're sick. Did you get off from raping people?
Not angry at people who restrict their freedom?
Oh, certainly. But I mean, fucking in the streets is a statement of joy, you know.
Okay.
You see?
Yeah.
I mean, I know exactly what you're saying about alienating certain people, but on the other hand, you progress in stages, you know, and you progress as you're able. You know, you progress at the rate of your own development, essentially. And, you know, I mean, we put out the slogan of rock and roll adults and fucking in the streets, and thousands of people in this state of Michigan responded immediately, you know. You see what I mean? And immediately, we put out the White Panther thing with all the weirdness of it, and we passed out 10,000 buttons in a week at rock and roll dances. You know, everybody went wild. They loved it. You know, they were deep into it, you see.
Millions of people started smoking dope.
Yeah, really. I mean, you talk about smoking. Tim Leary, you know, Tim Leary starts all the time when there's no LSD and goes out and starts talking about LSD. Millions of people take LSD, you see. Jerry Rubin and them, at the end of their trial, just sent out an idea. Say, if people don't like the results of this trial, they should do something about it. Banks burned down all over the country. You can't say that doesn't influence people, you see.
Yeah, I think there's real effects.
Yeah.
You know, there's real effects. How much more would the effects be by a different approach is the thing I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. That's why we've developed and changed and changed our name and changed our methods of working. And
this is one reason why Gene's running for city council in the state ward in the city of Ann Arbor.
Whereas in 1968,
I mean,
we wouldn't even think about
voting. We're going to fuck in the streets.
No, of course
okay.
not. No, no. See, I'm running under the platform of the human rights party.
On the other hand, we don't say we aren't going to.
I see that.
I mean, that's principle. You know what I mean? That's principle to say, we'll do this to get the part, you know? But if you want us to get up there and tell people to stop smoking weed, you must be crazy.
All right. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah,
I see that.
Yeah.
I see that as a big difference than going to some PTA meeting saying,
those aren't our people.
Exactly.
We smoke dope and we're going to
yeah.
fuck in
yeah.
the street. It's the difference between...
Just dropping the subject and talk about the things that they can identify with.
Yeah. Right.
It's the
yeah.
difference between being a radical and being on the street and trying to sell somebody a paper and shoving it on them, you know, and trying to make them buy it, you know, and just being a freak and going to dances and dancing with people and talking to people and having a free paper, you know, that you give away free.
You've been trying to get in here for a long time.
Yeah, I've been mulling over for a while. My basic interest right now, I'm with, you know, like everybody else like music. I don't know anybody that doesn't like music anymore. And I think that's more of a basis for the whole conspiracy around the marijuana anyway. Because personally, that doesn't do anything for me.
Oh my God, this is just some of the weed we were smoking tonight. That's some good weed in town right now. If it's kind of, you weren't getting off on, you ought to try and get some. These guys are like weed.
Anyway, what I wanted to ask is, I dig most of what's been said, but I think we're missing a point. And the point is that there's a lot of jobs that we have to create,
right.
And I say we, including myself and whatever your plans are,
right.
But
we're talking about the record distribution system setting up alternate houses for them. What are your economic plans? You know, what are alternate economic plans so that I can have a
Yes. Yes, essentially, that's what we're trying to develop. You know, essentially, we're very concerned with that problem, you know. Essentially, we're saying that we want to start in the music industry because that's where we can amass some capital, you know. In other words, that's where some money can be. That's the element of our people. Our most important product is rock and roll as a people, you know. Aside from the, you know, also, many of us sell our labor power, you know, but as far as our product, you know, it's rock and roll music. This is where we're, the exploitation, this is where we learn about imperialism in the way that RCA or Columbia or Kitty Parking Lots or any of those people, Kitty Parking Lots is incidentally owns Atlantic, Elektra, Warner Brothers, and a number of other smaller concerns. We're interested in reaching into there, one, taking the money out of the hands of those companies and putting it back into our nation or our community to build up bigger programs, to buy radio stations and television stations and things like that. And we're engaged in this work because at the same time you can develop an economic base and you have the mass media at your command, you see. You can put out images, you can put out ideas, you can put out theories and all kinds of things that people can pick up on. Well, it's the same, you know, earn where you learn, you know, sort of thing, you see. So you can do two things at once, you know. And we're concerned primarily to start with getting bands together and talking about different ways that they can form into unions for different purposes, to form a distribution cartel, for example, to form people's ballrooms, people's booking agencies. All this stuff needs money. This money can be generated by these bands, especially these big bands that can raise $50,000 in a night. You know what I mean? Money, $50,000, which goes usually 60 or 70% to them and the rest to the promoter. You know, we want to take all of this money. You see, we want to take $50,000 and buy a printing plant.
How many jobs does this create?
A printing plant?
Welfare rolls are going up every day.
Right on.
And I personally, I mean, welfare.
We're on ADC ourselves. Matter of fact.
Well enough, but then you haven't got, you know, you can't, if you dig cars, you can't get that fixed.
Yeah.
You can't ride a bike in the winter, or I don't like to ride a bike. And, you know, I mean, it seems like it's kind of sketchy right now, but...
Of course it is.
Are you talking about two economic systems in the United States, or are you...
Yeah, we're talking about starting to develop what is essentially a socialist economic system, you know, a communalist economic system within the ruins of the capitalist economic system, you know, which will come vigorously to compete with the capitalist economic system, you know, and which will provide an economic base for the development of a mass revolutionary movement, you see, of people who will eventually destroy the capitalist economic system, you see. So, and we see it as offering at the same time a model of what the economic order of the future will be like. The same way that our institutions like the Tribal Council and the People's Committee and our institutions like the Free Clinic, you know, and things like that are showing people what it's going to be like to get medical care in the future, you know, to go to a free people's hospital, you know, and get the free people's abortion, you know, and get the free people's appendicitis operation, you know. And to be treated by people who are warm, friendly, people that are not have long hair, you know, don't wear girdles. And stuff. I mean, people that you feel like being around, you know, rather than some white automatons and, you know, with the pointed brassieres and the girdles and the white stuff and the white stethoscopes and the doctors and all the cold clinical where you go into a hospital and you're terrified, you know. Or as in, you know, in our particular case, for example, we have a direct interest in this, you know. When we had our first baby, we went to the emergency, we presented ourselves, we didn't have no money, you know. we present ourselves at the emergency room of Harper Hospital in Detroit. You know, and says she's in labor. You know, please deliver this baby, you know. And they take her into the room and the doctor starts harassing her and haranguing her, made her cry. You know, I mean, just was vicious, you see, because we didn't have any money. You see what I mean? That's the kind of health system you have. Well, we want to say that you go, you don't have no money, you don't have no shoe, you're barefoot, you got VD, you know, you go down here, nobody says nothing to you about what are you doing fucking, you see? I mean, you got VD, you get the clap, you know, which is a direct result of the kind of ignorance that we're kept in about our sexuality and everything else, you know. So you get the clap and you go to a clinic in Detroit that they used to have at Herman Kiefer Hospital. I was a client there myself. And you go in and it, you know, and the doctor says something, asks you, you know, what is it? Well, you got a drip, you know, how long have you had intercourse since then? Yeah, you know, couldn't resist, see. And the doctor just blows up, you know. And, you know, and they tell you, like, if you a woman goes in or a young sister goes in and is pregnant, you know, they don't say, well, they don't deal with the problem, you know, they start haranguing her, you see, for having low morality, you know, and we're going to sterilize, you know, to Puerto Rican women and some black women, they sterilize them, you see, while they're giving them, okay, we'll give you an abortion, we're going to sterilize you, you see, and we're going to tell you about it after it's over with. I mean, this is the kind of medical care that you have in this country, you know, you have doctors making thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, and refusing to go and treat sick people, you know. So we're saying with free clinics and eventually free people's hospitals, you know, and x-ray clinics and all of that, that this is what it's going to be like. This is the reason that you should struggle against these pigs, see. This is the reason, because if you struggle against these pigs, you're going to have free hospitals. You see what I mean? We aren't just talking about abstractions, you know. So if you struggle against these pigs, you have free rock and roll. You know, you have free food. You see what I mean? And you get this, you can get this even now. You know, you can come down, we can't get a deal with free food yet. We can deal with $14 worth of vegetables for $4 every Saturday. You see what I mean? For 400 houses in Ann Arbor. You know, we can deal with that. See? We can deal with starting out with a Volkswagen van and seven people, and in a year, having renting 1.5-ton trucks on Saturday and going to the market. You know, we can deal with getting people on farms growing food and buying our own trucks and growing the food and transporting it to the distribution centers and selling it for cost. You know, meat, if people are into meat, vegetables, grains, everything that people eat. See, we can deal with that shit, you know, we have to have it. See, and we not only are dealing, we aren't selling our pan of toothpaste and electric toothbrushes, you know, and we aren't selling all of that, any of that shit, you know, you're selling food, you're selling hamburgers, you know, and hot dogs and pizzas, you know, and all that stomp, you know. You're selling food that makes you healthy, you see, so you do two things in one, you know, and the third thing is that while you're doing this, you're building a new society, you know, and you get to a point where you're building this and either the established order is going to come down and try and put it out of business or it's not. You know, if it is going to come down and put it out of business, it's going to be an armed struggle. You know, and the people who have been investing their lives and their blood and their word and building up this alternative structure, and the people who benefit from that are going to fight back, you see? And the pigs are going to be defeated, you know? And then when they're defeated, it isn't going to be a matter of all of a sudden having the problem of taking over this social order. It's going to be a problem of, well, we've developed these institutions so far over the years, what can we do with them now that we got all this shit available to us, you know? What can we do now? You know, we have these people who know how to run television stations. What can we do with CBS, you see? So you have that kind of problem, not, Jesus Christ, what are these cameras? We don't know how to deal with this shit, see? You have people who, over a period of time, have developed the skill to deal with that, you know? Through the tribal councils and people's institutions like that, you develop government skills. You develop administrative skills. You know how to deal large sums of money, you know, without it being ripped off and shit like that. You know how to direct, you know how to organize people to get tasks done. So when the government apparatus comes into your hands, when the state apparatus comes into your hands, you know what to do with that, you see.
You aren't at a loss.
So all the time, we're particularly inspired by the experience of the Chinese people. in the last 50 years. You know, we're particularly inspired by the way that the Chinese Communist Party set out in 1921 and went through a period of three wars, during which time it was building what they called revolutionary base areas, you know, where they actually, well, what's going on in South Vietnam today, the reason that this minuscule nation of people has been able to stand up to the largest and most vicious slaughter in the history of humankind, right? Why this, they've stood up because they've got an alternative government. The Provisional Revolutionary Government of Vietnam is a Provisional Revolutionary Government. It ain't on paper. You know, the minute that those troops go out of there, they deal with Thu, and they're ready to step in and run the country because they've built it up over the years through struggle. You know, they built it up by dealing with the peasants' needs, where the government and the imperialist creeps, you know, and creeps isn't even a word for them, you know. I mean, these dogs, you know, that have come in there, you see, the needs that they have not dealt with, you know. The revolutionary people of South Vietnam have been dealing with these needs on a day-to-day basis. They have people's hospitals, you see. They have ways of supplying food when the rice crop failed because the fields got bombed out, you see. They've been saying, that's why people support them. That's why they're able to struggle, you see. That's why they can point to these things. They can say, we deal with your health needs this way. These pigs don't deal with your health needs at all. They want you to die. They want you to fight for them against us.
No, really, they want you to stay safe.
Are you crazy? They want us to fight for them against you? Good God. You know, we better get rid of them. You see what I mean? So that's what, and again, I wish I could say to you, brother, that we tomorrow, you know, will open the First People's Bank of Michigan. You know what I mean? But I can't do that, you know? I mean, this stuff is developed piece by piece, you know? We start, I'll give you an example, you know, you use the principle of use what you got to get what you need, you know? Whatever you got, that's got to be enough because that's what you got, you know? So you got to start from there and move the next step. You know, if you got this room, then the solution is to go to the Civic Center, you know, because you can't get the Civic Center yet, you know? You go maybe to the next building and get a little bigger room, you know? Pretty soon, you see, you can go down to the Civic Center. You know, I mean, just using that for an example. You can sit in the Civic Center, there'll be enough people like this because they've been relating to the struggle from time to time. By the time you get there, there's enough people to fill it. You see what I mean? Yeah, or Chrysler Arena, you know. We put that on ourselves. You know, that was more successful than anything these greasy-ass promoters can do, you know. We can do that ourselves, not because all of a sudden we're magically capable of doing it, not because it's easy. You know, it looks as easy as it is to pay the money and go in the door. It ain't easy to do that shit, see? We started producing benefits 5 years ago in Detroit, you know, where we would lose money. Where you put on a benefit to raise money and you'd lose $75, and $75 was a whole lot of money. $75 was the rent, for example. You know, you put on a benefit and you wouldn't do it right, you'd make a mistake, you wouldn't advertise properly, you'd forget to call. You know, there weren't radio stations when we started. You know, I mean, there was CKLW in that. There wasn't no ABX or nothing like that when we started, see? They came on afterwards, you know. So you didn't put your flyers out in Farmington High School at the right time, you know. You got there too late, 10 minutes too late, you know. You see what I mean? Or you missed the printer, you know. You got high and, you know, didn't get the poster done in time or something like that, see? And you blew it. You know, those are valuable lessons, you know, when you miss the rent. That's a valuable lesson. You don't make that mistake again. You see, you don't make it quite the same way. You know, we started out with the first benefit we had to make money made, what, some $47, you know, or something like that, you see. And you keep on, you put them on maybe even after you have experience, you know, you do it the wrong way and it flops, you lose money, you know. You don't throw everything in, you can't afford to, you know. You still got to pay these lawyers, you see. You still got to deal with this, so you have to do it again. You ain't got no choice. You know, your daddy isn't writing no checks, you know, to pay you out on your own, you know, you're trying to deal with this shit. And over a period of years, you build up, you know, you become able to do this stuff, you see. If you look at the development of the rock and roll scene in Michigan, you see, and look at the rest of the country, it's completely unique. Every band in this area, almost, you know, almost every band in this area has played at least one benefit or free concert
in the course of his career, and some of them play over and over again, and when they make it, they don't turn around, you know. I mean, the only appearance Mitch has had in Detroit since his single hit on the radio station was a benefit of January 24th victory celebration, a benefit for the National Lawyers Guild that we put on. That's the only, you see what I mean? So they aren't deserting, you know. The MC5 got to the point they got scared to what he came down, you know. They got scared. Rolling Stone and all them were telling them they better cut loose from us or they would never get anywhere. See, well, they cut loose and the opposite happened because those people had the wrong analysis, you know. They gave up the one thing they had, which was people's faith in them, you know, and the dynamite kind of music that they were making. And they said, that ain't it. We got to, you know, play like the ones that we read about all the time, and all the real fine guitar solos and all that. See, we were just talking about that. You know, that's what we were talking about, see? And all these magazines are talking about, well, the fine art of picking. You see what I mean? They said, geez, we better learn how to play, you know? You know, I mean, that's how strong that shit is, though, that you're fighting against, right? You have a band that can go in and just turn a whole, you know, thousands of people into screaming maniacs, you know? And still in all, these creeps can come along and say, that ain't it.
The bass player can play the...
Yeah, the second record they made, they say Michael Davis has been playing in the band 5 years. You know, can't play bass, so he can't play on this record. That's the kind of... I mean, but that's just an example, you know, the shit that's out there waiting for you. You just have to keep fighting against that, you know. You lose. I mean, we lost. You know, I was just going to give an example of the band. When we worked with the MC5, I started managing the MC5 in 1967. I didn't know nothing about managing no band. I didn't know nothing about it. Completely mystified by the rock and roll business, you know. Knew nothing about it whatsoever, you know. Here's this band that lived in our neighborhood that I hung out with, smoked dope with, took acid with, you know, and went to all, every time they played, tried to be there because they were playing the most dynamite music I ever heard in my life, you know. And here they are, and some creep who signed for their equipment one time comes on and snatches up all their equipment. They haven't got an amplifier. They haven't got a guitar. They got a set of drums, you know. This is where we started, you know. From nowhere, you see. Piece by, we put everything we had back into the band, building it up. You see, getting it out to more and more people, putting it in the equipment so the music would be better, so people would relate to it more, you know. And you build up that 2 years, man. I spent every day for 2 years working on that, you see. I get ripped off, sent to penitentiary, and they won't even give my partner, you know, money for the rent. After I get locked up. You see, that's the kind of, I mean, they just, you know, we had a whole thing that had been built up to this point. I got ripped off, and they just ran, you see. Everything fell down, they started building it up again. You know, they started building it up again and again, you see. That's what you do, you know. So, what I'm saying is that if I can't run down a plan to you that you're going to see next week in effect, I can't do it, you know. I mean, I shouldn't even have talked about that other stuff because I'd rather have it when it happened. Then you can look at it and say, wow, this is far out, you know.
I didn't expect to get something in effect next week, but I just wanted to hear what you had to say about it. Because I don't believe the revolution happened here tonight.
Indeed.
Right.
Well, we used to believe that, see? We were fooled. You know, we used to believe that. But you're right, we were fooled.
But, just some questions.
As long as you have some economic plan, whether you go for tokens, you know, trade the rock. I'll trade this album for this album. I'll trade you this album for a couple of apples. And if you get albums so that they're cheap enough, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just hold over
here.
I don't know if you want to get into this.
Yeah, over.
How did you get like caught by the police? You know, when you were sent to jail. Like, what was it? I heard like you were set up or something.
Well, I was subjected to 2 undercover agents for 3 months. And during the course of that, one of them was a woman, one of them was a man. And during the course of that time, I gave the woman 2 joints. And a month later, I was popped, you know. So that's essentially what that was about, you know. I mean, it was just a stupid, you know. What can I say? On the other hand, I mean, there was more to it than that, you know. I mean, my part in it was stupid, but the police's part in it was a different thing, you know. I mean, they had threatened to get me, and they made a conscious attempt. They said I did it. What was stupid on my part was not being more vigilant, you know. But this sister, this woman actually, who I thought was a sister, you know, was very convincing in her role playing a human being, you see. And I made a mistake, you know, essentially is what that was about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say, Tom, you were talking to him about economics, but all right, say like, I, you know, want to get off the treadmill and shit, and I don't want to work the factory, screw the dashboards in, and I don't want to work, you know, for GM.
Right.
But how do I get the money to buy this farm where I can, you know, grow shit and have a kind of communal thing? You know, that's it. It's a big problem. And that's
really?
Why I think most people are. More people aren't doing it, you know.
Right.
You got it.
Right, of course.
Okay, well,
you know, we used to think you had to spend all your time convincing people that these ideas were right, you
no,
see.
We don't.
At a certain point, you know, you begin to realize everybody really agrees with them, you know, but they can't figure out no way to relate to it in reality, you know. Again, this is really a problem, you know, and it's a matter of trying to create mass production facilities, you know, raising capital. You know, setting up non-profit corporations. You know, when I say capital, I just mean a sum of money. I don't mean capital in terms of profit. You know what I mean? But raising large sums of money so you can buy large production facilities. You know, one of the first things we want to do is raise $40,000 or $50,000 in Detroit and buy a printing plant. Set up a printing plant with a newspaper printing press. So you can print all the papers in Michigan, for example, in the whole area, you see. That would provide jobs for black workers and white workers and rainbow workers, you know. They can provide jobs for them, that can cut down the cost of the newspapers, enable people to do more news, get more newspapers out to more people. There's just a, you know, I mean, in Ann Arbor we produce 15,000 free copies of The Sun every week. In Lansing here they do 15,000 free copies of The Joint Issue. And that ain't nowhere near enough, you know.
See, I think his question is, has also to do with like the way we support ourselves is through programs. I mean, nobody in our house has any jobs for money outside, except the band goes and plays jobs, you know.
The money that the band makes comes back and pays for the rest of it, you know. Which isn't a solution for you because you ain't got a band, right? Exactly.
There's people doing alternative work in the community and supporting themselves all kinds of different ways. For instance, the people that work at Ozone House or at the free clinic in Ann Arbor write some grant applications and get some money from here and there. They get some money from the city, they get some money from the Kiwanis Club and some money from the federal government, and they pay themselves a subsistence salary, you know, and expenses. Like in our house, nobody gets paid, but all their needs are taken care of. You know.
You better go into that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have no bikes to ride in the winter, you know, I'm afraid. You see what I mean? You don't have a car. You know, if you come in with a car, the car immediately becomes not your car. You see, the car becomes the car of the organization, you know. And when somebody has to go to the store to take care of some business or go get a microphone fixed or something like that, then what was your car is used for that, you know. The car that we're driving tonight is the car that a brother joined the party this summer. You know, this was his little Volkswagen car that his parents got him to go away to college in, you know. Now it's a car operated by the Rainbow People's Party, you know, that we can drive up to Lansing here, and I don't have a car. You know, we're on ADC, you know, we don't have nothing. So.
You see, some people support themselves that way, they get on welfare, you know. I mean, that's the most revolutionary thing you could do with the government's money, is live on it, you know.
Food costs down, the medical costs down.
That's part of it, too.
The costs down, so even if you're
the dope costs down. That's another project.
If you are on welfare ADC, you can buy a record every 2 weeks and still save for your farm. That's
right, or if you get the radio stations together so they're playing the right music all the time, you won't even need records.
Right.
You see, you get free music over the radio.
Oh, also by living.
You do it, the problem is, you see, you start with little things and you do it one at a time, and it doesn't look like ever, you know, that it's going to deal with people's needs, because the only thing that's finally going to deal with everybody's needs is the elimination of this kind of social order, you see. So finally, you're not going to deal with people's needs until you control the whole economic structure of this, you know, the country.
But in the meantime, one thing that really helps is if you live communally. The more people live together, the less each individual needs to live, Like, for instance, in our house, there's 22 people, and we spend $100 per week on food, you know.
That's about 75 cents a person per day.
Yeah.
That's two meals, you know.
We live
healthy
by ourselves.
Meals, you know?
And you just cut down on all expenses. Like, we have got 3 cars among ourselves. If we all live individually, we would have to have 19 cars, you know, 3 of them are little kids.
So that's, you know, that's one way that anybody that can start now can, you know, that hasn't got hardly anything, you know, people can do that. But it still doesn't speak. Very important, the question of providing jobs, you know. The food co-op is beginning to provide jobs. People, if not jobs, people who work on distribution on Saturdays get a free order of food, you see. So essentially they're being paid $4 for working that Saturday.
The psychedelic,
eh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're trying to develop the psychedelic rangers into actually a bonded security agency. So you can do security at rock and roll dances and stuff like that and get paid for it where some security police would otherwise get paid for it, you see. To get printing plants and record pressing plants, you know, anything like that, you provide jobs for people, you know.
Ballroom, like.
Yeah, the people's ballroom in Ann Arbor, some people will be able to make a modicum of money working there.
Garage.
We're looking into the possibility of setting up a people's garage in Ann Arbor, you know. There's any number of mechanics, brothers who are mechanics, and hopefully there'll be some sisters who are mechanics, you know, as they're being trained now by some of the brothers who have skills. So you get 5 or 6 of these people who are working for honky garages, you know, and get a building and start doing all the work there, you see, and hiring more people, you know, you don't ever hire anybody, you see. You want to do away with hiring, you want to do away with jobs, you know, jobs
social
are out,
security.
You see. You don't want to hire people, you want people to work with you, you know, and get some of the money to take care of their needs with, you know. And at the same time, you cut down on what you think are your needs, you see what I mean? And through a combination of the two, and the increasing, you know, the spread of this, organically, more and more people begin to be able to do this, you know.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You said something about when your dog was here,
Well, essentially what we were saying with that slogan, which was more or less a slogan, was that to say that the present penal system does not speak in any way to the needs of people, you know. But the present penal system does not do anything to correct crimes or criminals, you know, that it does nothing but produce criminals, you see. And that given the choice, say, between the present prison system as it's constituted, letting all the prisoners that are in prison out, I would unequivocally choose letting all the prisoners out. You see what I mean? Go ahead.
The question has to be, you know, why do people commit crimes in the first place, and why are they in there in the first place?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do about that, you see?
Yeah, you gotta change things.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
There's still people in there, come out and start ripping off everybody. You know?
Right, right.
But, well,
the point is that people, that many people have been twisted, you know, many people have been twisted enough by this kind of culture that we live in here, and this kind of social order, that they can't even relate to other human beings in terms other than violence, you know. They see another person, they see a woman, and all she is an object to rape, you know. They see a person walking down the street, all that person is somebody to be stuck up or shot or knocked down, you see. The prisons are not dealing with this. The prisons are making these people more twisted and more bitter, you know. You see what I mean?
Sure. I guess, you were saying also that you thought that being within prison,
Oh yeah, it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since it happened, you know.
Yeah.
If they said you want to go back to 2.5 tomorrow, I'd have to think about that. You know what I mean? But if that was what was called for, that's what I'd have to do, you know. And I was ready for the 10. You
know. Yeah.
First I buy the truck and I go straight to Jackson and mow it down, right?
Well, not even that. Stole a car for 2 hours. Smoked some weed, you know.
So most of those people, they are criminals. A lot of people come from the neighborhoods, they go hungry.
Poor.
Again, people that are eating those people are stealing. You would assume that they talk about rehabilitating.
Really?
That's the most rational thing I can think of.
Right.
That's why I'm the most rational thing.
Well, and there's another thing. You know, a lot of it ain't just about eating, you know. But if you look at it, man, objectively, you'll see that the dude who goes out with a gun picking people up is just following the example of Nelson Rockefeller. Only Nelson Rockefeller stuck up South America. You see what I mean? I mean, they're just trying to emulate the pillars of society, you know. They look at history and they see that John Jacob Astor moved in and ripped off all the fur in North America by getting Indians drunk, you know. So they're saying, well, why shouldn't we sell heroin? You know, we'd make a lot of money that way, you see.
People often freak out and say, you know, they're knocked out of prison. Oh, my God. But what they find is, you know, there are 15 or 10% of people in prison that are not too much of the main people. And,
Really? There are ways to help them.
Right.
Well, you notice if you look into societies that were organized on a communal model, if you look into, for example, Aboriginal society in this country, the Six Nations of the Iroquois, you know, their tribal organization, their political organization, you'll see that those societies had no prisons.
North Vietnam right now, they have an entirely different concept. You know, they don't even deal in the concept of punishment, you know, and that goes from like little kids in school when they get out of line, you know, or people who commit crimes on the street. They have a very low crime rate in the first place right now because the government does meet, you know, is responding to them and does start to meet their needs, but they don't even deal with punishment. You know, they say that if somebody does something wrong, it's because they don't understand, you know, they don't understand something, and therefore we will talk to them, you know, and deal with the problem that way.
Education and persuasion is a method to use. You know, if you have to isolate someone for a period of time because they're unmanageable, you isolate those persons for a period of time, you know, but you engage in education and persuasion and you show them, you teach them why they were wrong, you know. In this society, you can't even start with that. You can't take a prison and say to somebody, you were doing something wrong by ripping off that store, because that store is ripping him off.
I'll
tell you the best thing about rehabilitation is that if you're a prisoner and you say something to the deputy warden about rehabilitation, he laughs in your face. That's what rehabilitation is about. It's a propaganda rule, you know, put out by these real criminals, you know. The real criminals, you know, are right here in Lansing, you know. Gus Harrison, you know, is one of the biggest criminals. Frank Kelly, you know, I mean, these people are criminals. You know, Frank Kelly covers up the crimes of the I got a suit against the corrections department in federal court charging them rightfully with keeping me in isolation and locking me up and depriving me of my rights because of my political beliefs. Frank Kelly and his office comes forth to defend the prison instead of looking into instead of representing my interests as a citizen and looking into my claim, they're representing and trying to cover up and offering lies and shit, you see, in support of the crimes of their rap partners that run the penitentiary, you know. So that's, you know, essentially that stands on crime. Yeah, we gotta stop.